Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Immigration, the APA, and Prosecutorial Discretion Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 18, 2016, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in United States v. Texas. This case relates back to the Department of Homeland Security's 2012 Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which set forth special criteria to direct how DHS should exercise prosecutorial discretion in enforcing federal immigration laws against certain young persons. In 2014, DHS issued a memo that then expanded eligibility under DACA and directed establishment of a similar program for the parents of DACA-eligible persons, Deferred Action for Parents of Americans and Lawful Permanent Residents, or DAPA. 26 states sued in federal district court to prevent the DHS from implementing DAPA, arguing that DAPA violated the Administrative Procedure Act because it had not gone through a notice and comment process, and was moreover arbitrary and capricious. The states also argued that DAPA abrogated the president's constitutional duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. The district court concluded that of the suing states, Texas had standing, and temporarily enjoined implementation of DAPA after determining that Texas had shown a substantial likelihood of success on its notice and comment claim. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit affirmed that ruling, and further held that the other states had standing and has shown a substantial likelihood of success on both the notice and comment and arbitrary and capricious components of their APA claims. The Fifth Circuit did not reach the Take Care Clause claim. The four questions before the Supreme Court in this case are, 1. Whether a state that voluntarily provides a subsidy to all aliens with deferred action has Article 3 standing and a justiciable cause of action under the APA to challenge the Secretary of Homeland Security's guidance seeking to establish a process for considering deferred action for certain aliens because it will lead to more aliens having deferred action. 2. Whether the guidance is arbitrary and capricious or otherwise not in accordance with law. 3. Whether the guidance was subject to the APA's notice and comment procedures. And 4. Whether the guidance violates the Take Care Clause of the Constitution, Article 2, Section 3, a question the court itself directed the parties to brief. To discuss the case, we have Josh Blackman, who is Assistant Professor of Law at South Texas College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Blackman.
A brief background. In November 2014, President Obama announced a policy known as DAPA, Deferred Action for Parents of Americans, that will grant a deferred action status to roughly 4.5 million unauthorized aliens. Texas and 26 other states challenged the legality of the case. And today the court heard arguments. So there are three major issues that the court had to deal with. First is standing. Was Texas legally in court? Second, was this issue a violation of administrative law? And third, this issue a violation of the Take Care Clause of the Constitution. I will dispense with the last one first because there's something I read a brief on before Cato. The court didn't mention the Constitution. The Take Care Clause never even came up other than a stray reference to Justice Jackson's opinion in Youngstown by Texas SG Scott Keller. You would have known today was a constitutional case. So I'll focus the rest of my time on the first two issues, that of standing and that of the APA. So this morning, there was a piece in the New York Times by Adam Liptak discussing that the Chief Justice may be squishy on standing, and that may be his sort of minimalist approach to resolving the case. From my vantage point, I don't think that's going to be the case at all. About 30 seconds into the Solicitor General's argument, Justice Ginsburg was asking a question about something, and the Chief said, "Let's talk about standing." And the Chief was pounding the Solicitor General really quite hard on this, and there were a number of questions concerning driver's license. So the reason why Texas is in court is because it asserts that for every DAPA beneficiary who now gets a license, Texas has to pay a certain fee. And Texas argues that these people should not have been granted this sort of status. And the Chief Justice made the point several times that the states are in a catch-22. As Texas law exists now, if you have basically a permission to be in the United States, if you're an alien, you get a driver's license. Were Texas to change this policy, they would get sued by the U.S. government. So they're basically damned if they do, damned if they don't. If they leave it the same, they're basically complying with this sort of illegal policy. Or if they change the law, they'll get sued by the government. Solicitor General Verrilli would not disclaim the fact that the United States would sue. And perhaps even more problematic, there was an amicus arguing for the government. I don't know why, but this was an argument that he said, yeah, we probably would sue. And in fact, they said it would raise equal protection concerns. With friends like these, who these amicus were not particularly helpful. And Justice Alito also discussed this idea of a self-inflicted injury. So frankly, I don't think standing will be a concern for the Chief Justice. Of course, as always, we are down to 8, so it's conceivable that there can be a 4-4 tie on the standing issue. Justice Sotomayor and Ginsburg seem solid on standing. Justice Kagan didn't quite say much on standing, but we'll get to Kagan in a bit. And Justice Breyer had a series of long, convoluted questions about standing. And at one point, he asked Aaron Murphy a question that was so confusing. Aaron, who was the Chief Justice Roberts clerk, said, you know, I didn't understand your question. And Breyer said, well, if you didn't understand, let's forget about it, which I think was the perhaps the funniest moment of the day. Moving on from standing to the actual merits of the case, the crux of this entire case for Texas revolves around a sentence from the DAPA memorandum issued by Secretary Johnson, who was sitting in the front row of the court. The DAPA memorandum didn't just grant deferred action. It said that, it, quote, an individual is permitted to be lawfully present in the United States. Lawfully present. So what is the meaning of this phrase, lawfully present? Texas has argued that this actually is giving a quasi-legal status to the aliens who were given this sort of deferred action. In effect, Texas argued this changes a person's status from illegal, which is what Congress wanted, to legal. And this took up, I would say, maybe 70 or 80% of the argument time, where Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kennedy and even Justice Alito seemed very confused by this phrase, lawful presence. And Alito said, as a matter of English language, if we tell someone that they're lawfully present, that suggests that they're here legally, even though Congress has deemed them here not legally. And the Solicitor General tried to explain that this is somewhat of a technical term that's been used in a lot of immigration law, and this is not really granting any sort of legal presence. But the key move, and this is actually something the Chief Justice cited by page number, on pages 16 and 17 of the government's reply brief, the SG actually said, well, lawful presence may be better viewed as tolerated presence. Yeah, lawful presence may be better viewed as tolerated presence. This was a significant, I wouldn't quite say retreat, but it was a significant statement by the Solicitor General to perhaps back off of the argument that maybe they screwed this up. Now, here comes to the crux of the case and what should give everyone on this call a horrible case of deja vu, which is a saving construction. I don't need to remind everyone what happened in the NFIB case, where the statute says it's a penalty, but the Solicitor General, as I discussed in my first book, Unprecedented, the SG said, well, if you take this statute that says penalty and you cross it out and you write tax, well, that looks like a constitutional law. Indeed, that's precisely what Chief Justice Roberts did in the NFIB v. Sebelius decision. I still get, you know, flashbacks whenever I hear about this. So when I saw the SG's brief a couple days ago saying that lawful presence should be called tolerated presence, I'm like, oh, God, another saving construction is coming. And indeed, really made just that point, and he didn't make it implicitly. He made it explicitly. He said, quote, if the court wants to put a red pencil through it, that's totally fine. In other words, if the court wants to strike out the word lawful presence from the DAPA memo, they can do that and then uphold the policy. This is the same sort of saving construction that happened at NFIB a few years ago. Now, I don't think that works, and Aaron Murphy of the Bancroft Law Firm, who was arguing on behalf of the House of Representatives, said that doesn't work, that the DAPA policy, in effect, gives lawful presence in other respects, not just with that word. So this isn't merely an objection based on labeling. Another problematic aspect of this, though, is that even if they strike this out, there are other benefits associated with Social Security, work authorization, so it doesn't quite work. Although what again, gives me pause is at one point Chief Justice Roberts posed the question to Texas Solicitor General Scott Keller saying, well, couldn't we just strike it out? And the chief was making this kind of strikeout motion with his hand, which gave me a cause for concern. And then Justice Kagan was pushing extremely hard on Solicitor General Keller and Aaron Murphy for the House about this sort of strikeout approach, or couldn't the court just save the policy? To the extent that the chief votes to uphold DAPA, I think and perhaps worry that this may be a route, although for reasons that I think that are in the brief of Texas and the U.S. House, that wouldn't quite work out. Another point that was raised extensively by Justice Kagan concerns the issue of what are you actually challenging. Now, Texas challenged DAPA. The provision that allows for work authorization was actually promulgated in 1986, decades ago. So Kagan was saying, why haven't you challenged the 1986 regulation? Why are you actually challenging DAPA? And Texas argues, well, it's not the regulation by itself that's a problem, it's DAPA. And the reason why is that when this regulation was promulgated in 1986, the president basically said, this will give work authorizations to such a small number of people, it's not even worth reporting. Okay, DAPA gives almost 5 million people this. It's way beyond the scope of anything that had been done in the past. It was, to use Scott Keller's words, unprecedented. So that's another perhaps way that the state of Texas loses, that they're challenging the wrong thing. But beyond Justice Kagan, I didn't see too much of an appetite for that. On a final note, one of the issues that came up was Justice Breyer asking something almost a political type question, and it was somewhat odd the way he framed it. But the question was basically, you know, why did Texas challenge this? Were they only concerned about the dollars and cents added to the license plate, or is this actually a political disagreement? And the amicus, Thomas Sciens, who was arguing for the Jane Does, actually said that Texas Governor Greg Abbott said he thought this policy was unconstitutional and that this was a bad policy, and that's why they're in court. I didn't think that statement was particularly helpful to the federal government. Texas has an injury based on the driver's license, but the specter of standing was there. Now, in terms of from the courthouse steps, this was the most insane courthouse steps I've ever seen. They actually shut down First Street. I've not seen that before. They had demonstrators spilling into the street, chanting all different things, and there were signs. I had never seen that many people. It was actually even difficult to even walk across the street to try and get out of there. But this was a very passionate case. I'm loath to make any sort of predictions, but this doesn't look like it's going to be an easy case to toss up on standing. Let me make one final note. Due to the posture of this case, we are on appeal of a preliminary injunction. Okay? There's no stay in place. If the court does end up dividing 4-4, the effect of that judgment is that this goes back to the district court in Brownsville, in federal district court, where we hold a trial on, in fact, whether DAPA is lawful, or it's resolved on the summary judgment motions, but there's actually going to be some sort of evidentiary hearing that must happen in the future. Another alternate route is if the court rules for Texas and says that this must go through the notice and comment rulemaking process. Well, if that happens, it's unlikely that President Obama will be able to do so in his remaining months in office. So no matter what happens here, if the court rules against Texas, it's up to the next president to decide whether or not to implement this. If the court rules against Texas, or if the court even just splits 4-4 and they affirm by an equally divided margin, then this case goes forward, and again, the next president will decide whether to even prosecute the case in district court.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.